Letter to the Ephesians, chapter 2, verse 8. For by grace are ye saved through faith, and that not of yourselves, it is the gift of God. Just recently, I have been reading Charles Wesley's journey, his brother to John. He just returned from America, started his work as a clergyman in England, and felt very unhappy. There was something missing in his experience. He had no joy in it. And at last, he came into a converting experience, and he found it was so simple. Salvation by faith. Just to live by faith. It is the gift of God. Now, being friendly with George Whitfield, a fellow Methodist, he was urged to go and speak in the open air, an unheard of thing then, and at last he consented, and to his delight and amazement, he had a congregation of 200 people. Later on, he thought he would try the open air again, and he estimates there were 10,000 people there listening to him, and the next meeting was 5,000, and so on. And wherever he and John spoke, there were multitudes of ready listeners. Isn't that astonishing? But it proves this they believed in God, and they wanted to learn more about him, or to come nearer home. I've heard Leslie Kelly, ex-town clerk of Peel, tell how religiously he belonged to the Methodist chapel in Salisbury Street in Dublin. And Salisbury Street always held its Sunday school anniversary the week after Rose Mount, now called Trinity Church. And Trinity would have its Sunday school anniversary and then leave the staging up for Salisbury Street to take over the following Sunday. And Leslie said, the place would be packed. The service was supposed to start at 6:30. But he said, if you weren't there for 6 o'clock, you couldn't get in. All the seats were taken, downstairs, upstairs, chairs in the aisles. He said, and I remember one or two occasions, at 6:10, they couldn't get another soul in. It was packed so tight, and they decided to start the service then. There was no point in waiting till 6:30. I spent part of my ministry in Linacre Mission in Liverpool, and I have read, as a fact, and I've heard from the old people, that from the turn of the century to the beginning of the war, Linacre Mission had the largest Sunday school in the United Kingdom, 3,000 scholars. And look at the Sunday schools today and ask what is wrong. Now, you were through the history. The Christian church has in times risen and fallen. It's been kicked about, it's been hammered into the ground, it has risen again. It carries the visions, especially with the Romans, the Roman Catholics and the Protestants, and then splinter groups after that. But however divided the church was, all divisions agreed that the central fact of their faith was Jesus Christ, the risen Lord, Savior of all mankind. And of course there were heretics, but the heretics believed in God. It's only that they differed in their theology, their interpretation of God. Now, I want to tell you that we in this generation, now in our own time, we are experiencing something which is unique to Christendom. It has never happened before. And it is this. People don't argue about God now. He's ignored. He's ignored. It's not worth discussing. Out. Now look at the Sunday school. Our Sunday school attendance now, in all the denominations, is pathetic. I am sure the only religious instruction they get is at the school, and thank you very much, Mr. Galbraith, for all is done there. But does that mean that the parents don't care about God? Why should the children be educated in the Christian faith? It's an irrelevance. You come to marriage. From what I read last week, of those being married now, of those living together now, 50% of them cohabit. They're not married. 20% last year of the children born in England and Wales were illegitimate. What's happening to our homeland? Now, Jesus gave two commandments. Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and so on. And second, thou shalt love thy neighbor. And the first commandment has gone. God is irrelevant. They don't follow that. So they stick to the second. And people are prepared to give to their neighbours, especially if they're from a long distance. They will give to the family images of earth and this kind of thing, and yet talk it on with their neighbours to come to reconcile with them next door. But believe me, if the first commandment has gone, the second will go also, unless there is faith to keep it. Here we have prisons. You know what's been happening, not straightway, and the rest. And the politicians say, we will give you more warders, better conditions, we will build better prisons and so on. That's not the answer. What makes a criminal? From what I can read, a criminal is egoistic. He's got the idea that he can do what he likes regardless. And when man, and our standard of living is as we've never had it before, but man through science has been able to bring this high standard of living, give us comfort, people are concerned about money and that kind of thing. Why should they need God? Man is his own God. And he's turning out to be a devil. As you can see with the criminal, there's no power to which they can subject themselves. Now this is the situation today. We're in a pagan society. I have spoken in the open air week by week for 30 years, and I have seen the change. When you come to the fact of God, it's closed, it's a closed subject. Now, what about ourselves? We are so concerned about the things we can get for our own comfort. We're so busy that we can't send children to summer school and that kind of thing. How many of our members will stand aside in the quiet and meditate upon their own soul and their spiritual relation to God Almighty? How many do that? The spirit is ignored. All our interests are outside of the spirit. So we go chasing on. And other things try to get at us. Have you noticed now, to get at us, the headlines become bigger and bigger, even though the news becomes smaller and smaller. There's universal propaganda which simply tries to condition people even if it has to interfere with the truth. There is more travel today with no destination. There is plenty of speed today with little purpose. We have more power but less construction. Indeed, I sometimes think that it takes something like a sledgehammer to knock it before it can get through. All the signs are bigger and bigger, the adverts are bigger and bigger, and politics have to become fanatical before they can break through. Even our music, Mr. Calabrese, now becomes shrieking and yelling. You heard something last night in the European Conference. Shrieking and yelling with acrobatic company. Painting explodes. Here we are. In this noisy, restless world, and yet somehow we've got to find time and place in which to hear the still small voice. You see, we have a zest for faraway things. People now take the holiday and they think the farther away they go, the better it will be. Strange sights, bizarre events, at home. There's nothing wonderful in being at home and telling all the chores, the commonplace, the ordinary. What's wonderful about that? No, let's get abroad. still calling you Lenny. Born in poverty, a displaced person in Egypt, working as a carpenter, attend an elementary school, speaking to a woman of the world, being tender to children, merciful to a thief, understanding a woman apprehended in adultery, facing up to the vested interest of the city and condemning to shame and crucifixion. You get it bit by bit. And nothing really happened to him that can't happen to us. But he took these ordinary things and he put life into them. He made them real and true and glorified God. For example, he came to the outcasts, what they call sinners in the New Testament, means people who didn't go to church. That's what the Pharisees called them. He came to the outcasts, to the sinners, and you know how he dealt with them? And he found they were lost indeed. They were confused, they were confounded. They couldn't evaluate the torturous things in their lives. They couldn't make sense of it. But he did for them. And they went away a new creation. And you may say, God never worked like that with us. What can he do with us in our ordinary things round about the house? Can I put something to you? When I was in the army, in the jungle in North Burma, Special Force took over from the Chindis, surprised from the air, in the wettest place on earth. The water could rise 6 feet in half an hour. You never slip trench like your bed. In half an hour, it's full. Iron rations all the time, never sold bread, vegetables, cooked meals, and all the diseases that were going, typhus, malaria, leeches by the millions, sucking in blood, causing jungle ulcers, foot rot, everybody I knew with dysentery, and so it can go on and on. The mismatched experience apart from the actual fighting. And I began to think, I never knew fear as I thought I would know it, in the sense of panicking and running away. Just a hardness within. You could handle dead bodies like a butcher handles a shoulder of meat. Wounded, just happened. And I began to ask myself, am I losing delicacy of feeling? What makes a civilized man always the sensitiveness of the spirit? And even after the war, the Lord forgive me, I could feel this. But I wanted this sentiment. And I asked you about your spirit. Has it got numb? Has it been hard with prosperity? Are you sensitive? Have you a delicate feeling towards the good things of the world? You have these things that are coming. I'll make a guess. Somewhere, sometime in your life, there was a split moment which you didn't expect and you felt you were going to drown. Maybe when you heard the first cry of your first baby, it was sacred. Maybe just a child reaching out his hand to his father. The clasp perhaps, the reassuring glance of a friend. It may be some wonderful sight in nature. Perhaps something in a church, I don't know. I can't tell you. I can only remind you that once, and maybe often, you had moments when something clicked and you were on point. Isn't that true? Why? How? What is this thing? God is with us. That was our first. He's with us all the time. He's in us. You remember Christ talking about the vine and the branches? And he goes on to say, I in you, and you in me. John says, there is a light that lighteneth every man that comes into the world. And that's what it means. God is with us. The writer of the Hebrews says, God is nearer to us than hands or feet, nearer than breathing, nearer than breathing. And what happens? Well, either you recognize this thing, or you won't. We've heard some good music tonight. Now you cannot understand or appreciate music unless you give yourself to it. And the more you give yourself to music, the more you realize in greater degree what it all means. And this is true of any subject. If you're going to learn and grow, you will give yourself to it. And this is true. Prayer. It's true of God. It's true of love. There wouldn't be any broken marriages if the partners could remember that. Always to be given in love. Now Jesus gave a parable about the mustard seed. The mustard seed, he said, is the smallest of all seeds. But it can grow up in the tree in which the birds of the air can nest. Something changes. You don't know why or how. A little seed. If you want anything bigger than that, you may not find it. It's there. But we can let it grow. I can give another army experience. It's rather harrowing, and I'll miss out a good bit. The last week I was in the jungle, we were completely surrounded. First 2 days, we lost a third of our men. One company commanded by a sergeant upon one leg. Got to the point when we couldn't save the wounded. As soon as the stretcher bearers went in, we just took them all off. The dead were rotten, maggoty. All we had was our iron rations and a bottle of water for 7 days. And believe me, getting towards the end, it was desperate. We felt so tired and weary because we had to be on the alert even at night, for the Jap was creeping in closer, the snipers getting everywhere. And on the 7th day, there was despondency. I heard a man counting his bullets, he only had 3 or 4 left. And one for myself, he said, putting it in his pouch, I'm not going to be dead in a prisoner. Waiting for death. I had in my little footprint a wounded sergeant on one side and a private on the other. And we all thought at the end, the mark was being gone between our heads. And this is the only thing I've taken out of this devil come boldly to the throne of grace, that we might obtain mercy and find help in time to come. Turn over again, he is able to say to the uttermost, see he ever liveth to make intercession for us. And really help, maybe, I don't know. I got a tremendous lecture experience. And there's a little wasn't not with the southwest border. A little wasn't thrown on his belly, and I'm shouting, get back, you'll be killed, get back. That's the one. He said, we know we're finished. The men wouldn't know if you're praying for this. I said, tell them we're saved, they've just read it. Tell them we're saved. And I didn't get to the rest of it. Perhaps the Japs thought with reinforcements coming, perhaps their ammunition was running out, I don't know. When within half an hour, the snipers were coming down the street like monkeys, the Japs were coming out of the slip trenches, they were running, fire. And not at the end, he was saying. And the men got out of their trenches, they were like drunks, they could hardly stand, and embracing each other. They all said, we want to have a service of thanksgiving. There was an atheist there who said, what do you come for? Oh, he said, there'll be no atheist out this week. But this is my country. I learned so much from that. We were rejoicing that we'd been saved. That we, the danger had gone. And we can walk the streets of this island. And we can go to bed at night and be saved. I think it's a wonderful blessing. A wonderful blessing. The great thing that struck me was he is able to save to the uttermost seeing that he ever lives to make intercession for us. I've always thought that in prayer we had to go to him. I've never given it a thought that he was interceding for us. But I've used that many and many a time. You go into a hospital and some poor soul says, I'm so weary, I can't even say my prayers. And I say, well, don't bother. He's better. He's making intercession for you. Why? Talked about commonplace. There's the base hospital. A chin came in, wounded in the leg, and they put him in bed. And then the nurse came along, put a sheet over him, and then brought a tray, a cup of tea, and a piece of bread. And when he saw that, he picked up the bread and he said, bread? Real bread? And then getting the sheets, he pulled it right off of his neck and he said, and clean sheets, it's worth being wounded for. I never get into bed now, but what I say, clean sheets. And sometimes when I'm having bread, I'm saying, oh, there's so much in the common things that can teach you. He comes to you. You might forget all that I've had to say, but remember this. He is with you. Paul makes the point that in the past, God's secret has been hidden for ages, but now disclosed to his people. And the secret is this, the Colossians. Christ is in you. Hope of glory to come. It's not with us struggling and chasing out the things. By grace, you're saved. Through faith. And that not of yourselves. It is the gift of God. Will you take it? Amen. Thank you. were lusted by his law. The Lord bless you and keep you. Krishna Janisa Christ as Drayi, as Shetika Jola Spirnu, Marauvar Nalyar Eson the Dray.
And companion in Jesus my Lord. He's a wonderful friend. He's a wonderful friend. Every hour of the day he's so precious to me. What a wonderful friend is he. What a wonderful friend is Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. He died to redeem me. He's living to keep me. What a wonderful friend. Wonderful friend is
shall say.